Coming up on this episode of Disneyland Weekly, we talk about the Food and Wine Festival.
And tips on how to plan your next trip to the resort and more. Disneyland Weekly starts now.
This is Disneyland Weekly.
And welcome to this episode of Disneyland Weekly for the week of March 14th, 2018. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Therese Urban. Thank you for joining us this week. You're going to hear us say on this show for the next couple of months, we're taking a survey of our listeners and we'd like for you to participate. It will help us learn more about you, no matter how long you've been a listener or how frequently you listen to the show. So please take a few minutes and visit our website at disneylandweekly.com/survey. You'll be automatically redirected to the listener survey, and you can complete the survey anonymously. Thank you.
Well, this week we're recording the episode on Sunday and not on Tuesday as usual, so there isn't any news that came out after Sunday in this episode. Next week, if there was any breaking news, we will talk about that. Otherwise, enjoy the limited news, discussion of the Food and Wine Festival, and tips on how to plan a trip to Disneyland. Now, let's get to the news.
Tonight, we're going to share a wonderful dream come true together. In 1955, an amazing man named Walt Disney dreamt of a magic kingdom.
All come to this happy place. Welcome. Disneyland is your land. Here age relives fond memories of the past, and here youth may savor the challenge and promise of the future. Disneyland is dedicated to the ideals, the dreams, and the hard facts that have created America, with the hope that it will be a source of joy and inspiration to all the world.
This week, the Orange County Register reports that strollers have been a high theft item. Sometimes people just use them to put their own kids into, and security finds them after the park closes in the parking areas. Other times, a stroller is stolen and listed on Craigslist the next day. Even the whole stroller isn't taken. Sometimes thieves will go through bags and pockets and take out the valuables. So how can you stay safe? The Orange County Register posted these tips. 1. Buy a wheel lock. Do not attach the stroller to the rails or fences because sometimes they must be moved to make way for a parade, for example. But strollers with locked rear wheels can still be moved for short distances.
Number 2. Put your name and etch your driver's license number on the stabilizing bars underneath, which will provide proof of ownership.
Number 3. Don't leave anything valuable in the pockets.
Number 4. Take a photo of your stroller with your kids in it as you walk into the park in case you need it later for identification purposes.
And number 5, if you buy merchandise on Main Street, keep your receipt and pick it up on the way out so you don't have to store it in the stroller while it's unattended.
I've actually used that service before. It's pretty cool. So nobody likes to carry stuff around all day.
I'm amazed that they actually allow you to do that because can you imagine being the store clerk and having to keep all that organized, trying to remember whose is what? But I mean, it's awesome that they do that. I feel like a lot of work has to go into doing that.
Yeah, so there's a couple, when I've used it, I've never done it right at the point of sale. What I've done is I purchase it, and then you take the receipt and you go to the newsstand in the front of the park. Mm-hmm. You give them your bags, they staple all the stuff together, fill out a piece of paper, and then when you come back at night, they make sure, because they want to make sure that they go down the list and make sure that all the stuff that's on the receipt is still in the bag. Mm-hmm. And it's a free service. I highly recommend people using it. Well, this week, the Disney Parks blog posted a new flyover of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge construction. It gives a view of the new area and really shows how large and expansive it is. You can take a look at it on the DL Weekly Twitter feed or at the link in our show notes. What did you think of this flyover?
It looks really neat, and it's made me really excited. And I'm just like sitting on pins and needles just waiting for Star Wars Galaxy's Edge to open. I always want to say Star Wars Land. I know that's not
well,
right.
For so long we said Star Wars Land, so.
But yeah, no, it looks amazing, and it's just incredible to me the amount of work that is going into making this land feel like you've been taken to a galaxy far, far away.
Agreed.
Along with this flyover, they also posted a sneak peek of the food offerings coming for Pixar Fest. Food is inspired by Up, Coco, Toy Story, and Monsters, Inc. Some highlights include the Boot Beer Root Beer Float, served in a souvenir Woody's boot at the Golden Horseshoe, a Coco Churro, which has a chocolate and vanilla bean dust and salted cinnamon sugar, served with a spiced Mexican chocolate dipping sauce in Frontierland, and a Sully Premium Popcorn Bucket, available at any outdoor vending location.
Yet another popcorn bucket to sell out everywhere.
And yet another flavor of churro.
Yeah, another one. It's getting almost like rose gold out there. The root beer, the Boot Beer root beer float actually looks pretty cool.
Looks
at
really
first,
cool.
At first, I thought it was like chocolate with ice cream in it.
It did. So there's a photo posted on the Disney Parks website of it. Well, it's kind of like an obscure photo of the Boot Beer root beer float. So it did. It looked like it was the boot was actually chocolate, and it looked like this root beer float was served in a chocolate boot. So it looked really cool. Upon further looking, it is just a plastic souvenir cup. So I'm curious. I do need to know if they have Andy's name written on the bottom of the boot or not.
I'm sure they will. Disney's very good at that type of stuff. Well, not all the food sounds as wonderful. The Fredrickson bologna sandwich and the Fredrickson TV dinner both sound not to the level of Disney food standards. If I wanted a TV dinner, I'd buy one for like $3 and not the $10 that Disney's probably going to charge. And the Fredrickson bologna sandwich sounds like a fried bologna sandwich.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if that's really elevated Disney theme park food that I'm sure you're going to pay for.
Well, and poor Mr. Fredrickson. He's being so like typecasted here, a fried bologna sandwich and a TV dinner.
Yeah, really? Come on. If you're going to be old like that, you're not going to have you're just going to have a bologna sandwich and a TV dinner.
Poor Mr. Fredrickson.
Poor Mr. Fredrickson. Some of this stuff sounds really cool, though. The root beer float I definitely want. Mm-hmm. It's nice that they're having stuff all over the park. Something different. I always like when they change up their food and stuff, and it's not the same old thing. As long as they don't replace my favorite dishes, they can try stuff all that they want. So this week, we are taking a break from our tour of California Adventure, and we are going to first talk about the Food and Wine Festival that's happening at Disney California Adventure, and then we're going to talk about what you need and some tips and whatnot to successfully plan a trip to Disneyland. So Teresa's very, very excited about the Food and Wine Festival, which runs from March 2nd, which was started last week, up until April 12th. So what are some things that are going on?
So there are all sorts of different events going on. The first section of events that we're going to talk about, these all do require reservations. So they have Celebrity Chef Live at the Hyperion. Watch as star chefs create signature dishes, share secrets of their success, personal stories, and even some of their favorite recipes. Guests are also invited to sample the dishes after the show. So the event cost is $99 per person. They do only have, I believe it was only two different dates that they had this going on. So it is kind of a limited seating.
Did one already pass?
One did already pass.
So there was two different people that were for this, so it's not quite as exciting as people think. Mm-hmm. So Guy Fieri already did his earlier.
Yeah, he was just there on the 9th.
Right. And then at the end of the month, we have Robert Irvine from Kitchen Impossible, and he's going to be there at the end of the month?
The end of the month.
But you said, were you saying earlier when we were putting the show together that they only have like the one?
It's just, so it's just the two chefs.
Yeah.
And it's just the two shows. So each chef does the one show. So that's probably why it costs so much because
it's,
you know, kind of a one-time thing.
It's a bummer though if you miss it or something, like if you really want to get in and see one of them.
Yeah, definitely would need to plan ahead for this one. So something that's similar to the Chef Live is they have something going on every Sunday. It's called Sweet Sundays. So you join different celebrity pastry chefs as they create their delicious desserts. Your day actually, it's kind of a long sounding thing. The day starts with a light breakfast and a wine toast during the live baking demo. These chefs are going to show you how to make some of their signature desserts. Also are going to be sharing you some of their cooking tips. Plus you're going to get to sample the yummy creations that they are making during the presentation. So this event cost is also $99 per person. However, there are quite a few more events or event dates for this. Like I did mention, it is, looks like it is most, if not all Sundays during the
Food and Wine Festival.
So
this could be cool. I mean, I like the idea of like coming in and like going through the process of making whatever pastry, you know, dessert stuff. You eat your breakfast, you do your wine toast, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I guess as you're doing that, it's cooking. And then you get to eat the fresh stuff.
Well, and it sounded to me like they're doing multiple desserts during the presentation, and it's not just one. So that's kind of nice. Cool.
Quite a variety.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently the next thing they have here is winemaker dinners. Each dinner will focus and highlight wines from different vineyards located in California. The meals, courses are specifically prepared and designed to enhance the flavors of the wine. This one's a little pricier. The price is ranged from $175 to $300 a person.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're getting wine with it and like a meal, I mean, it sounds like it's like a full...
It is. It is multi-course meals. It depends on which one you sign up for, but I mean, I think the smallest course meal, I think, was still 4-course meal.
That's still not, so, I mean...
It sounds like it's a lot of food.
And it's probably, you know, really good chefs. It's not just, you know, Bob in a kitchen somewhere making something. Coming up after that is the Brewmaster Beer Dinners, which I know that they're coming from Wisconsin. I know there's quite a few people who would probably really enjoy this. So this features a 4-course beer pairing menu, featuring crafted brews from the Carl Strauss Brewing Company. At the event, the beers will be paired with a special menu from the Disney culinary team. The event will be hosted by Brewmaster Matt Johnson. The event costs $150 per person. That, again, is not too bad, because you've got a 4-course beer menu with, you know, each of the different beers, and there's the Brewmaster there. So
plus the special menu. So, I mean, who knows how much food you're getting there, too. So,
sure.
Yeah, definitely good value if you're into that kind of stuff. I'm not a big beer person myself, so I would not pay $150 to do a craft beer pairing event, but I get it.
Yeah.
There's also going to be various wine, beer, and spirit education and tasting seminars. So each of these seminars is about 30 to 40 minutes. Some of the seminars are going to be hands-on, like the spirit ones. You actually get to get in there and create the cocktail during the seminar. And cost for this is a bit more reasonable. It is only $20 per person.
This reminds me, I've mentioned on the podcast before that I watched some videos from this guy who makes videos in Orlando called The Tim Tracker on YouTube. And they had something, God, I want to say this was at Epcot, that around the, it was either Epcot or Universal around Halloween time. And they had a thing like this where you would make the spirits, like you'd put in, like you'd mix in, I think it was at Epcot, because it was like all science-y looking.
Mm-hmm.
And you could mix it in all the stuff, and then like at the end you drank what you made, which is kind of cool.
Very fun. So there will also be different culinary demonstrations. And this one's kind of interesting. It's a little bit two-sided here. These are included with your theme park admission. But what's included is standing room only, and you do not get to do any of the samples, but you still get to go to the seminar or to the presentation. If you wanted to upgrade and get one of the VIP packages, it is $30 per person, but this does include reserve seating, a private meet and greet with the chef afterwards, and then also sample tasting of whatever dish that they prepared during the seminar.
Well, depending on who the chef is, that might be worth it just to meet them. I don't know. It says sample tasting of the prepared dish, so it depends, I guess, on what the dish is going to be. But
well, and they had it all sorts of different times for this and all sorts of different guest chefs are going to be rotating into this. So you could almost do this multiple times and have different experiences each time you went.
I do like the idea that there's a free aspect of it.
Yeah.
And then you could pay to get like the extra stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Disney should be doing with a lot of things, because then you don't have to pay an extra thing if you don't want to. But if you want that little extra, you can.
Sure. So there are also a lot of different events that do not need reservations. So the big one is kind of really what the whole festival is set around, is called the Festival Marketplace. So you actually get to walk through the different outdoor marketplaces to discover different foods that are inspired by different fresh Californian grown ingredients. So like avocados, garlic are some of the main ones. But there's also local wines and craft beers. This is kind of a pay-by-plate event. It's not included with your park registration, so you do have to pay to sample the foods, but they do have, it sounds like, over a dozen outdoor marketplaces that you can go check out and look at the different.
So these are the different like little food stands along,
like,
the parade,
yep,
route,
like
kind
the
of stuff.
Booths. Yep, the nice. Little food booths.
Mm-hmm. That's nice that there's a bunch of different options and whatnot you can go through. Next is the family-friendly seminars, family-focused presentations on many different topics, including cooking demonstrations and more. Presenters will share their passion and experience during their 20 to 30-minute presentations. Some of the topics include growing your own vegetables or learning to prepare some of the festival marketplace favorites. That's kind of cool. So you go have some stuff from the marketplace, and then you learn how to make it.
Exactly. There's also a Junior Chef, which is a hands-on event for kids ages 3 to 11, led by none only by Chef Goofy. The children will actually get to follow a recipe, mix everything together, then they get to place their finished goods into a magic oven. So each participant does get to leave with a wrapped and ready-to-eat treat, hence the magic oven, since I like it. Anyways, there is no cost to participate, but the event is available on a first-come, first-served basis.
At first, when I saw the magic oven, I was like, so the kids can make whatever strange concoction, and they'll put it in, and then they'll get a pre-made.
Exactly.
So they don't have to eat what they've made, because who knows what came out.
And, you know, I'm curious to see if they're... quote-unquote recipe with Chef Goofy even has anything to do with actually baking cookies, or if it's just kind of random.
Yeah.
Might be kind of fun.
I don't know. I'd do it. So there are also a couple things we're going to mention here that are both for annual pass holders. They're pass holder perks. So if you are an annual pass holder, there are special photo opportunities with props and a photo pass photographer, character greetings and photo opportunities, special food and wine items for purchase, complimentary collectible art button, and a device charging station. The annual pass corner is located in the Hollywood back lot.
The one major big thing, though, that is a huge perk to the annual pass holders is they can get what's called a Sip and Savor Pass. So again, this is offered only to annual pass holders. The Sip and Savor Pass is a souvenir lanyard that includes coupons for select food and beverage offerings at the festival marketplace. So this pass is $45, but you do receive a commemorative 2018 Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival lanyard and 8 food and beverage coupons. So the pass holders use the coupons at the different booths and don't actually have to then pay for whatever food or drink that they are getting from the booths.
I like that.
The other cool part about this is the pass holders also receive a special annual pass holder button at the marketplace location with each Sip and Savor coupon. So there are a total of 12 different button designs available. So each time you use one of the tabs on your tasting card, the vendor is supposed to give you a button. So make sure to ask if they don't offer you one to make sure that you get that free button.
Yeah, I've seen some reports online that the vendors just forget to give you the button or whatever. So if you definitely want that button, make sure you ask for it. You know, I'm sure no problem, they'll just give it right to you. So this whole food and wine festival sounds pretty good. Now it's making me hungry.
See, now you know why I was so excited about it.
Yeah, you know, I will admit, Teresa for the last 2 weeks has been trying to get us to talk about the food and wine festival more. And I've been kind of, So looking at all the stuff we just talked about, though, I kind of wish we would have done this like last week for the beginning of the festival, but we didn't.
There's still time.
I just need to listen to Teresa in the future. So something that was actually suggested in our Slack to talk about was tips and whatnot of traveling to Disneyland. Now, I know I used to make trips like 4 times a year to Disneyland because I previously lived in Northern California. So traveling to Southern California to go to Disneyland would be just like traveling from here. It's just we didn't pay for plane.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't pay for plane tickets. We would just drive. It was a 7-hour drive. So let's start with getting to the area. And of course, we're going to talk about flights. I really don't have any crazy tips for flights. All I can say is just go online to wherever you go to buy plane tickets and purchase whatever is the cheapest thing for you, or whatever amenities you might want. Maybe you like flying first class. I'm one of those people that like, I just want to get there the cheapest way possible. It's from where we are, it's only a 4-hour flight. I can deal with cramped, terrible seats for 4 hours. It's not that big of a deal. My favorite sites to book flights on is either kayak.com or going to southwest.com, because Southwest flights are not actually on Kayak. So the only place you can buy Southwest online is on Southwest.
Well, and Southwest is kind of interesting. Well, depending on where you live, you know, whether or not they service your area, I guess, because Southwest does only go to certain places. But you actually buy one-way tickets with them. So it's a little bit more flexible, so you can kind of look at the calendar, see when you're cheap. If you are flexible with your dates, you can see what day's cheapest to go out and which day's cheapest to go back and kind of play with it that way. So that's kind of nice to have that flexibility.
Yeah, and they're really an inexpensive, Southwest in general is a really inexpensive carrier. I know that if you were flying out of the Minneapolis airport, I've also had really good luck with Sun Country Air. That's their hub is Minneapolis. And the times that I've gone to California and gotten really inexpensive flights, they're red-eye flights, so they take off at like 11 at night or whatever, and you get in really early in the morning. But that may actually work for you, because if you're like me and don't want to waste a single minute of your vacation, if you fly the red eye, so let's say you, in our examples soon here when we start talking about hotels, we priced it from June 3rd, which is a Sunday, through June 7th, which is a Thursday, because we figured it's kind of the beginning of the summer rush. It's the cheapest days of the week. It's a Sunday through a Thursday. The busy things are Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And so we figured, you know, we'll price things out that way. So let's say you fly Saturday night, you do this red eye, you get there Sunday morning early, but that Sunday you can go to the park. As opposed to a lot of times when I fly, if you fly, you know, let's say you fly at 11 in the morning and it's a 4-hour flight, plus there's the time change. So for us, it would be you'd get there at 3 p.m., but there's a time change, so you'd actually get there at 1 p.m., so that's not too bad. So you get there at 1 p.m., but like half the day is gone. So you're not going to waste one of your days at the park just on a half day. So that's one way to do it. I wrote this in the script a little wonky. I'm going to actually flip it around because now that you've got there, you've flown to Anaheim area, how do you get around? So I recommend if you have time and you're really price conscious, just take a bus. There's a pretty good bus system that you can take around. There's also shuttles that you can take. If depending on if you book certain hotel rooms, you can take shuttles.
I was going to say I've used that in the past where depending on whatever hotel I was staying at, they did offer some sort of shuttle service from the airport. So that's always really nice and really convenient. One less thing to worry about. You know that they're going to take you exactly where it is that you need to go. So that's always a bonus.
It is. If you aren't as price conscious and you don't want to ride a bus with a bunch of people, you can always use Uber or Lyft. In the Southern California area, Uber and Lyft are great. I know the last time we were in Southern California, we took Uber, not necessarily around Disneyland. We took Uber from the Anaheim area, actually, up to Universal. And I believe it only cost like $40 or something for the whole, and it was like an hour trip. So like not too bad if you want the convenience of just the two of you getting somewhere and not having to rent a car. Because then you have to parking in Anaheim and LA is terrible. So Uber or Lyft for that. And then when you buy tickets, where do you buy the tickets, Teresa? Like your park tickets.
Oh, my park tickets. Well, I'm old school and I just get them right from the Disneyland website themselves. I don't spend the time to go to, I know there's all sorts of different like discount ticket outlet type things that you can use, but I usually don't.
Well, you got to save some money.
I know. I'm always like worried that I'm going to pay for it and they're not going to be like real or something. So I'm just a spaz, I guess.
I understand that. I can understand that. I know the first time I bought park tickets, not through Disney or through like Expedia that sells them or whatever, or back in the day when my mom would book us trips, she'd buy them, she'd get them from like a travel agent as a package, which you could still do. Or a lot of times you can book your hotel room and usually they have discounted tickets at the hotel.
A lot of the hotels, since they're right next to the park, do offer.
But I like to have all those big purchases out of the way when I get there. Like I just want to have everything, you know. So a couple websites that I've used in the past that are very good. And actually one of these websites, well, both of these websites are very good for planning in general. And there is, if you've got time, go sit on one of these websites because there is tons of information. So the first one is mousesavers.com. And I always go to them first because they have literally like a novel worth of discounts and different places you can get tickets and how you can save on packaging it with like Universal or if you want to go to SeaWorld or like or San Diego's, like they have packages for all this stuff and like where you can get the best prices. They always keep track of what local retailers and stuff. Sometimes like Costco will have a deal on tickets. They make sure they have that stuff there. If they have any type of military discounts and stuff, those show up on there. They have some school discounts and stuff if you're a college student in the Southern California area. All that stuff. They even have areas for discounts on annual passes. Not many. It's just the Southern California stuff, but a discount's a discount. The other website that I like to go to as well is parksavers.com. And we used Park Savers. We actually bought our Walt Disney World tickets through Park Savers because they had a good deal for the amount of days we wanted for that. However, if you buy through mousesavers.com or parksavers.com, the 5-day ticket, which I always tell people that you need to be at the Disneyland Resort at least 5 days to get to everything and not have to rush like Teresa usually does.
Yeah, I usually do it in 3 days.
I try to do 5 because then I don't have to worry about it. And I love Disneyland so much. Like the amount of days I can be there, the better. So a 5-day park ticket, they're both the exact same price at about $350 for an adult. So you do save a little bit because I believe the gate price was $370 or $380, something like that. So you do save some money.
More money to spend when you're in the park.
Exactly. So something else to think about is they also have five-day tickets that are park hopper or one park per day tickets. That can also save you some money if you're not worried about park hopping. Also, you want to consider Max Pass to get those photo passes and to get the extra through the app, being able to get fast pass reservations. So don't forget about Max Pass.
Yeah, I haven't decided my next trip if I'm going to utilize the Max Pass or not. I'm still kind of on the fence.
I will say when we went to Disney World and we got we paid like $160 for their unlimited photo pass service.
Yeah.
It was worth it because you don't have to carry a camera and there's photo pass people everywhere now.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
If you don't have to think about it and you know that like all of those pictures are just going to be on your computer, like at the end of your trip, it's awesome.
Well, and you know they're going to be good because they're professionals, right?
Right. And the ride photos. And they do the Disney Magic ones where like they have you put your hand out and you feel like an idiot at the time. But then later, like Tinkerbell's in your hand.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So there's that magic. Another really useful tool, especially for Disneyland, because you never know what the crowds are going to be like, are crowd calendars.
Yes. I always make sure, even before I start planning my trip, this is one of the first things I do is I check the crowd calendars to try and figure out. I'm not a big crowd person, and I realize that I'm going to a theme park. There's always going to be a crowd. There's never not going to be. And especially with how Disneyland is kind of trying to revamp themselves, they're trying to not really have an off-season now. So there's always something going on. But I still like to try and look at this just to see, because I don't know, like, when the kids in California have school and don't have school. And, you know, there's different variables to this. So I always like to check that to try and see when the slower times are going to be. And those are usually the times that I want to be in the park because I feel like I get more out of my time there and get a better experience when there's less people around me.
The first time I used a crowd calendar was when we went to Disney World because I had never been to Disney World. I didn't know what the crowds were going to be like.
Right.
We went at the beginning of June a couple years ago. And one of the main reasons we used a crowd calendar was we also wanted to go to Universal. So we looked at the crowd calendar for both parks, and they have different busy days. So the way we, and with Disney World, there's four parks, and like Epcot's like a 2-day park at least, but like you don't have to park hop if you go to Epcot, you just stay there the whole day. Yep. Same thing with Magic Kingdom. Well, we looked at it and we said, okay, our first day there, Magic Kingdom's crowd isn't too bad, so we should probably go to Magic Kingdom that first day. Now, the second day, Epcot wasn't too bad. But, like, the day that the Magic Kingdom was less busy, Epcot was busier. So we kind of were looking at, like, okay, where do we want to go? And then in the middle of our block of Disney, we had a couple days where Disney was just crazy outrageous, but Universal wasn't. So we picked those days to go to Universal and then come back and do Disney a couple days later. So the same thing can work in Southern California because a lot of people, especially if they're flying somewhere, they don't just go to Disneyland. They also go to, there's a Universal. Mm-hmm. You can drive down to San Diego and go to the zoo. So you can, or the LA Zoo is also very good. So you can go and kind of pick the days and figure out, you know, what's good. So the first link of a crowd calendar, and this will all be in our show notes, but I'm just going to mention it here real quick too, is you can pay for this service through touringplans.com, and they offer crowd calendars and stuff for all of the Disney resorts, and I believe they also offer Universal and stuff as well. And you pay, I think it's like, it's really not that expensive. I think it's like $12 a year or something, or $13 a year, and you get access to all their stuff. And I believe they also have it broken down with like what attractions at what time of the day are busier and stuff. So, yeah. I mean, you're getting a good value out of it. If you don't want to pay because you're price conscious or maybe your flight ticket costs too much or whatnot, you can go to undercovertourist.com, who has crowd calendars for like everything in the LA and San Diego areas for free. So you can go on there and see, you know, what the park hours are, how busy or not busy they expect it to be, that kind of thing. Crowd calendars are great. I'm glad that they have this service for all this stuff. And then the last thing is, if people have been to Disney World before, they have dining plans you can buy like as a package when you book your Disney hotel and you book your Disney tickets and you book your dining plan. So basically, your whole trip is kind of paid for, mm-hmm. especially if you have a family, that's really important. Unfortunately, Disneyland does not offer a dining plan at this time. And I think that lends to the fact that a lot of the people that go to Disneyland are locals and mm-hmm. annual pass holders, so they don't need to have a dining plan.
I have heard rumors that they are considering it, but yeah, no, at this time, they do not offer a dining plan. So next thing to talk about then mm-hmm. is where are you going to stay?
So I'm going to let Teresa start this one and talk about where she usually stays and what the pricing. Again, before Teresa starts, I just want to say all of the pricing that we have in this whole segment, we did from June 3rd, which is a Sunday, to June 7th, which is a Thursday of 2018 this year. And today is Sunday, March 11th. So this was pricing as of March 11th. For that week.
Yep. So obviously these prices can change. We're just kind of doing this just to give you kind of an idea.
And compare.
And just a little bit of comparison too. So when I usually visit the parks, the last hotel that I stayed at, I think I'm going to have to keep going to because I really liked it there. We stayed at the Residence Inn by Marriott. It's about a block and a half away from the park. So nice and close, easy walking distance. We were there with a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old. They had no problem walking to and from the hotel, from the park. So that was always, you know, always a bonus. But the nice thing about these is instead of a hotel room, they're actually mini suites, I guess. And so they all do have a full kitchen, which is really nice, especially if you have a family.
Saves a lot of money.
Saves a lot of money. Even if you're not actually cooking in your kitchen, you can actually take your leftovers back with you and actually have the means to reheat them and, you know,
or you can order a pizza, and if you have extra pizza, you can reheat it.
Exactly. Yeah. So a bit more flexibility there. The other huge, big perk with this, free parking. Huge, huge, huge. And the thing that I really, really liked is they had the biggest breakfast buffet thing in the mornings that was totally included, and it was just awesome.
Well, that can save you a ton of money.
Yeah. Just huge. It was the biggest continental breakfast I had ever seen in my life. I don't even think this is considered a continental because it's that massive.
And it was included?
Included, nice. Yeah. And so we, every morning, would go down, and it was open nice and early, so you could go down, could fill up before going to the parks, and then, you know, head out for the day. So that saved money just by having the one meal included with our stay.
Did they have the airport shuttle, too?
I'm not sure if they had the airport shuttle because we drove that time. Okay. So if they did, I didn't utilize it.
Gotcha.
So for just pricing sake, I looked at what a one queen and one double sofa bed suite would cost. It is roughly $186 per night, or $871.78 after taxes and fees for the full 5-night stay.
Four night, technically.
5-day, 4-night.
Yep.
And that was the dates that we had looked at in June. And so actually we did look too. This is one of the higher, this is one of the higher weeks, it looked like, because they had some graduation things going on
week
in the parks.
Yep,
so
grad nights were happening. Looking at the schedule, so Sunday the 3rd was not a grad night, Monday the 4th was not a grad night, but Tuesday and Wednesday were both grad nights. So things could be a little bit different there. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to kind of leave the best hidden kind of thing for last. I'm just going to kind of talk about some places that I've stayed before. So I'm going to start with the most expensive of places I've stayed. So literally as you cross Harbor Boulevard from the bus area is the Parkview Inn, which is literally, bam, right across the street. So if you want something that's not a Disney hotel and you want to stay like as close as you possibly can to Disneyland with like not having to walk very far, Parkview Inn. So their cheapest rate for this week or of the June 3rd through June 7th was a 2 queen beds, no smoking, $201.50 a night, or $806 total with taxes and fees. It's right across the street. So even though the nightly cost was more expensive, it actually ended up being cheaper than the Residence Inn once you added taxes and everything. I'm not quite sure. Maybe the Parkview Inn didn't do the resort fees and stuff in that. I'm not sure. But Parkview Inn, right across the street, it was okay. I mean, it was just, you know, I mean, it wasn't like the best hotel I've ever stayed in, but I think the reason that you pay the price you pay is because it's right there.
I'm sure, yeah. Do they offer breakfast?
I think they had like a continental, but it was so like
a little one?
Yeah, it was like, here's a couple donuts, here's a bagel, here's a toaster.
Goodbye. Gotcha.
Yep. The next one I've never stayed at personally, but I've heard amazing things from. And if you ever go on to micechat.com, they constantly partner with them. And they actually have, if you go to their website, they actually have the Matterhorn cam, which is a live cam you can look at, and it looks over at the Matterhorn.
That's cool.
You literally can look out your room and see the monorail go by. So it's really kind of cool. It is a little bit further of a walking distance because it is closer to I-5 up Harbor from the Parkview Inn. Okay. So you're kind of next to the park. You're actually next to Disneyland, not California Adventure, which is nice. So the Howard Johnson, for two double beds, it's $169 a night or $790.92 with taxes and fees. They have a really, talking about kids, they have one of the best hotel pools. Like, it's themed really well, and like they just renovated it a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. So really cool. It's also a tower, so like you could have views into Disneyland and stuff, which is nice.
Neat.
The one I always stay at, though, and actually in researching for this episode, I freaked out at first because it used to be a Super 8 on Catella, and I was searching for it and I couldn't find it. And I was like, oh, God, did they close? Because they have been the most reliable hotel I've stayed in at Disneyland. Well, they've been renamed. Somebody else must have bought them or whatnot. It's now the Kings Inn Anaheim. It's actually right next door to the Anaheim Garden Walk. And, you know, If you're adults and you're going to Disneyland and you're not worried about like little kids having trouble walking far distances towards park closing or whatever, maybe this is for you. If you have the little kids, maybe this isn't for you because it is a little bit further of a walk. I don't find it's too bad. I also, people that complain about the far walk, I'm like, you're in the park walking all day anyway, so what's another couple blocks?
Maybe that's the problem. They spent too much time walking in the park.
Maybe. This one is probably the cheapest. Yep, it's the cheapest on our list. It's $112 a night or $524.16 total after taxes and fees. It's good, inexpensive. Their continental breakfast is much like the Parkview Inn. It's, you know, very simple. There is a pool. There's free parking. It looks like when they switched from Super 8 to the King's Inn that they renovated a lot of the rooms. When I book a hotel room in a place like this, I don't care as long as the bed's okay and like it has a working shower and stuff. And this has always come through for me.
See, and I'm more picky. So that's why we always go with
that's true.
The residence. I want something that I don't have to be worried about if the sheets are clean or not. So
yeah,
I like going to the ones that have, you know, everything's white on the bed so you know for sure that it's clean.
That's true. I understand that. I've never had a bad experience.
I'm a little bit of a germaphobe, though, so that's part of it.
But a lot of people are, especially in hotels. Mm-hmm. But for me, usually, I mean, I look at it like how long are you staying in the room? For me, I only go there to sleep. Literally, we come back, I lay down, I fall asleep, I wake up in the morning, we go back to the park.
See, I do that too, but I still need it to be nice.
Yeah. I just don't want to spend a lot of money on some place that I'm barely staying any time in. That's all. So I have a hard time. I'd rather spend money on other things, I guess. If I'm going to be in the room more, I definitely will want to spend more money.
Sure. So we do have some of the Disney hotels on our list too. And I think I speak for both Tag and myself. These are kind of bucket list places. Eventually I would love
to stay at them. Well, I've stayed at the Paradise
Pier. Oh, you have? Well, then never mind. It's a bucket list item for me on my Disney bucket list.
The other two are bucket list though. I'll agree.
At least once I'd like to stay at them. You know, obviously I can't afford to do it every time I visit the park. But, so the Disney Grand Californian Adventure. Why can't I talk? Disney Grand Californian. So the Disney Grand Californian is $661 per night or $3,093.96 after taxes and fees for those four same nights that we've been discussing.
Now, the Paradise Pier, I didn't do the Disneyland Hotel, and I'll get to why in a minute. So the Grand Californian is going to be the most expensive Disney hotel. Mm-hmm. The least expensive Disney hotel is going to be the Paradise Pier. That is $353 per night. And I didn't calculate how much it cost with all the stuff. I was just quickly looking at that. So the big hidden thing that people don't know about, and this blew my mind when I started researching this when we were going right after we got back from Disney World. And if you're going to Disney World, this trick works there too. So keep this in mind. If you stay, or this is even better, Teresa, what if I told you you could stay at the Grand Californian for instead of $3,093, what if I told you it was only $1,280?
I don't think I'd believe you, but go on.
So, part of all of the Disney parks, well, Disney World and Disneyland at the Grand Californian specifically, but if you go in Disney World, most of the Disney-owned hotels now have this. They're the Disney Vacation Clubs.
Oh, sure.
Now, one way that people offset the cost of their vacation club is that they rent out the points. So the way that this works is a specific room in the DVC wing, because it's like a whole separate wing. It's just people that are vacation club. Mm-hmm. It's not like a normal hotel. They buy, the way they have to get the rooms is they pay by points. Mm-hmm. So this time of year at this particular property, in this case, the Grand Californian, costs this many points per night. A lot of people rent those points for pretty cheap. So I looked it up. So for the Grand Californian, if you do a studio, which mm-hmm. is like a normal hotel room, mm-hmm. it's $1,280 a night. For a one bedroom, it's $2,496 $1,280 for the whole week, sorry. Four nights. Yep. So one bedroom, $2,496 for that whole week. Finally, getting up to the normal price is a two-bedroom for $3,328, or you can go really crazy and you can get a grand villa, which is like a huge presidential suite kind of thing, for $6,784 for those 4 nights.
Wow.
Now, if we go to the cheapest Disney hotel again, Paradise Pier, $353 a night, the average per night for the Disney Vacation Club, if you were to do the studio, is only $320. So you're actually saving $33 a night if you did the Vacation Club rental instead.
So do you have to be a Disney Vacation Club member to get these prices? Or how do you find out how to rent these rooms from these people?
There's a few places you can buy from online, but I've heard the best reviews and reliability from David's Vacation Club Rentals at dvcrequest.com. Again, all these links will be in our show notes at disneylandweekly.com. But if you go to dvcrequest.com, it pops up his website. It doesn't look that great. I mean, it's kind of funky looking. But they have a nice tool at the top called the cost calculator. And if you click on the cost calculator, they kind of explain, there's a note at the top about things being added for a couple of the Disney World DVC rentals. But I just moved over to June here, and I selected the 3rd through the 7th, and then it pulled out total U.S. dollars required for the entire stay. So, for instance, if you wanted to go for the same days, June 3rd through June 7th, if you wanted to go to Animal Kingdom for that 4 days, mm-hmm. a studio is only $640. That's not bad. And you're staying on Disney property and getting all those perks. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you, because this is important, I think, that there is a downside to this. For you being a germaphobe, maybe this matters, maybe this doesn't matter. But for all of these, housekeeping only comes in once every 4 days.
Oh, I don't care if it's me.
Okay. But
I just don't want other people's germs.
Housekeeping only comes in once every 4 days.
Okay.
So for me, though, to stay at a Disney thing for cheap, for inexpensive.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I don't care. Don't come clean it for four days.
You know, and honestly, I'm kind of weird even about, I'm weird.
You don't even like the people coming in?
Well, no, because I don't clean my personal room nightly. I don't need you to come clean my room daily. I think
it is nice to come home at the end, though, and the bed's made and everything.
Yeah, I make my own bed. I don't know.
Okay, I get it.
But, you know, like, I don't really see the need for housekeeping to come in daily anyway, so it would not bother me at all if they didn't come in and I could just call the front desk or whatever if I needed something. I'm sure that's fine.
Right. Yeah, no, so next time, the goal is next time I go to Disney World, so this kind of meets my dream. My dream for Disney World is to stay at the Contemporary, because I've always thought the Contemporary was super awesome. Mm-hmm. The downside with Disney Vacation Club is they actually have a whole tower that is just a Disney Vacation Club. It's called the Bay Lake Tower. Mm-hmm. For those same 4 days, I could pay $1,088 for a standard view, $1,216 for a lake view, or $1,536 for a theme park view. So I could go on my back patio of my Vacation Club rental mm-hmm. and watch the fireworks at Magic Kingdom.
That would be amazing.
And Grand Californian, I believe you look into, depending on where your room is located in the tower, I think you look into California Adventure, which is pretty cool. I've always wanted to see the park at night, like doing their like maintenance-y, magic-y stuff.
There you go. You could be sitting out on your balcony with your little binoculars.
I would, too. So I told you I stayed at the Paradise Pier. So Beth and I actually stayed at the Paradise Pier back in like 2002, I think it was. Okay. And we were looking out our window because we had a theme park view window. We only stayed the one night because it was so expensive. Cool. And actually, funny story. So we got there. We checked out of our cheap hotel to check into the Paradise Pier for the one night, right?
Sure.
We get there. They don't have a reservation.
Oh.
I'm like, but I booked it.
Yeah.
Here's my email.
Oh, no.
I booked it for a year later.
Oh.
So they said, you booked it for the wrong day. You booked it for the same day, but a year later. They said, hold on. And they moved the reservation, and we ended up having the theme park room. So that worked out really well. And so.
It would have been awful. What if they would have been full?
Heart would have been broken. Yeah, that's what would have happened. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so we went up and stayed. I think we were on like the sixth floor or seventh floor or something like that. So fairly high up, not the top. But we looked out into California Adventure, and this is when they still had the Malibu-mer. Sure. And so I saw like at like one in the morning, I see all these flashlights because they're like inspecting it. Yeah. So I see these flashlights moving around. I'm like, Beth, look, they got the flashlights. and unfortunately from where we were, like there wasn't really much else going on, but they were like inspecting the Malibu-mer. And so like I didn't have binoculars or anything, but I should have. But we were looking out, we were like, oh, that's so cool. So I don't know. I think when we stayed there, I think that's also the night that we went into, they didn't have security for the whole Esplanade back then. And after the parks closed, they closed security down anyway. So we could actually walk up to the front gate of Disneyland. I think it was at like midnight or something, and there was like one security guard hanging out just to make sure you weren't going to hop the fence, but you could kind of see under the train tracks, you could like see down Main Street, and the lights that come up for the parades turn into spotlights, so it's like looks like daytime in there. And I'm like, there's trucks on Main Street. See, if I ever got
being all nosy in the
if I ever got
night.
To stay in the dream suite, I'd be like, that's at the window all night, like ruining the magic for
no,
me.
No, you. It, let's be real. You would be out of the dream street walking I would, around.
Well, they lock
saying,
you
is
in.
It okay? Oh, they lock you in.
Well, yeah, because they don't want you wandering around the park.
Because but, yeah, because of people like you, they lock everyone in.
Whatever, people. Whatever.
I'm fine with being locked in a castle. That's totally fine with me.
So some of our feedback this week. So our friend Laura over at Patreon, responding to the pictures that we posted of Teresa's house that we discussed back in episode 19 about having a little bit of Disney in each of the rooms.
Yep.
She said, pretty cool. So not that exciting, but pretty cool.
Yep. So just to recap, I have the photos were of my Lumiere and of my little door from Alice in Wonderland.
They were good pictures, too. I'm glad we sent them. So we have some Twitter feedback.
Yeah, so Rosa C. Lopez at RC Lopez Art, in reply to us thanking her for following us, Rosa says, you're welcome. Just started listening to your podcast. I really enjoy them. Keep up the great work. Well, thank you, Rosa. We appreciate listeners just like you.
Of course, and we love your feedback.
Mm-hmm. And Laura at Random Mexican, in response to talking about A Bug's Land last week, says, yay, Heimlich.
She
in
also
reference to Tag's lovely voice.
Oh, I love Heimlich. she also texted me because I am friends with Laura in real life, and she said she missed hearing the voice. So thank you, Laura. So we didn't get any Facebook, iTunes, or email feedback this week. As we wrap up this week, we want to thank all of you for listening each and every week. Please don't forget to support the show if you can by going to DisneylandWeekly.com/support or by sharing Disneyland Weekly on social media or by word of mouth with other Disneyland fans that you know.
If you have been on the fence about becoming a patron over at Patreon, we have added and changed a few of our levels. The major changes include access to our chat on Slack at the $3 level instead of the $10 level, buttons, stickers, and pins starting at the $3 level, all the way up to dinner with us in the park at the Club 33 level. Check it out at DisneylandWeekly.com/support and let us know what you think.
We haven't seen any new reviews on iTunes recently. Please write a review so we can read it on the show and others can know what you think. If you want to join in the conversation, you can follow us on Facebook by searching for Disneyland Weekly, on Twitter at DL Weekly, or sending us an email at feedback@DisneylandWeekly.com. Feel free to email, Facebook, or tweet us any questions, feedback, or suggestions you may have about the show. Also, if we left out some good vacation planning stuff or trip planning, let us know. We can talk about it next week because I'm sure that there's tons more that we didn't talk about.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.